All right, strap in, everybody. We're diving deep into Bitcoin today. You know, going all the way back to the beginning.
Back to the Genesis block.
Uh-huh, yeah. We're talking about the OG Bitcoin paper, Bitcoin, a peer-to-peer electronic cash system.
By Satoshi Nakamoto, of course.
Oh, of course. Got to give credit where credit is due. Published back in 2008, this paper basically threw down the gauntlet for a whole new financial system. One without those pesky banks or middlemen.
Yeah, it really was a radical idea at the time.
Absolutely. But before we get too deep into the how, maybe we should start with the why. What problem was this mysterious Satoshi Nakamoto even trying to solve?
Well, the paper starts off by laying out all the vulnerabilities of our traditional financial system. You know, the one where we have to rely on banks and institutions for basically every online transaction.
Like when you buy something online or send money to someone.
Right. Every time we do that, we're opening ourselves up to all sorts of risks. You've got fraud, disputes.
Oh, don't even get me started on those transaction fees.
And don't forget the delays. Sometimes it feels like it takes forever for a transaction to go through.
Yeah, tell me about it. So if I'm understanding this right, Satoshi was basically saying, hey, there's a better way to do this whole online money thing.
Exactly. Satoshi's solution was to cut out the middleman entirely and create a system based on cryptographic proof instead of trust.
Hmm, okay. So then Bitcoin was born.
Pretty much. The paper describes it as a digital version of cash, where you can make payments directly to another person without needing a bank to process it.
So like handing someone a $20 bill, but digitally.
Exactly. But of course, that brings up another issue. With physical cash, you can't really copy it and spend it twice. How do you prevent that from happening with a digital money?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a problem I think a lot of people have with digital currencies in general.
Hmm.
How do you stop someone from just making a copy of their Bitcoin and spending it over and over again?
That's the classic double spending problem. And Satoshi tackled it head on with, well, with the blockchain.
Ah, the blockchain. The word on everyone's lips these days.
Right, and for good reason. It's the foundation of Bitcoin security and what makes the whole system work.
I know our listeners have probably heard of the blockchain, but I think it's worth explaining exactly how it works, especially in the context of this paper.
Sure. Imagine a public ledger, a record of every Bitcoin transaction ever made. But instead of this ledger being kept in one place, it's replicated across a huge network of computers.
So every computer on the network has a copy of this ledger.
Exactly. And each block added to the chain represents a set of transactions. And these blocks are all linked together in a way that makes it incredibly difficult to change any of the past records.
So if someone tried to tamper with one block, it would be like trying to change a single link in a massive chain. It would throw the whole thing off.
Exactly. And because everyone has a copy of the ledger, any attempt to cheat the system would be immediately obvious to everyone on the network.
That sounds pretty secure.
It is, and it's all thanks to this distributed, decentralized nature of the blockchain. No single entity controls it. It's a collaborative effort.
That's a pretty cool concept.
Yeah, pretty revolutionary, really. And then on top of that, you have proof of work.
Ah, yes, the infamous Bitcoin mining process. Isn't that how new Bitcoin is created?
It is, but it's also a crucial part of securing the network. So you've got these miners who are basically using their computers to solve incredibly complex math problems. And the first one to solve the problem gets to add the next block of transactions to the blockchain.
It's like a race. And the winner gets rewarded with Bitcoin. The paper even compares it to gold mining.
It's a very apt analogy, actually. Think about the resources involved in gold mining. You need heavy machinery, you need people to operate it, you're using up energy, all of that to extract a finite resource and secure its value.
I see. And Bitcoin mining is kind of like the digital equivalent of that.
Precisely. Bitcoin miners are investing in powerful computers, using up electricity, all to generate new Bitcoin and, most importantly, maintain the integrity of the network.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, there's also this concept of simplified payment verification in the paper. Can you explain what that is?
Well, not everyone wants to run a full Bitcoin node, you know, downloading the entire blockchain, constantly verifying every single transaction that can be a bit much for the average person.
I can see that being a bit daunting. So how does this simplified verification work?
Essentially, users can rely on a trusted source, like a well-established Bitcoin service provider, to provide them with the necessary information to verify their transactions.
So it's kind of like getting a summary of the transaction data instead of having to dig through the entire ledger yourself.
Exactly. It makes it much more user-friendly. But the paper acknowledges that there are trade-offs involved.
What kind of trade-offs?
Simplified verification relies on the assumption that most of the network is honest, which is generally true, but not guaranteed.
I guess there's always some risk involved.
Right. And that's why for larger transactions, the paper recommends running a full node for added security.
That makes sense. The more you have at stake, the more important it is to be in control of your own verification process.
Right.
Speaking of risks, one of the big concerns with Bitcoin is the possibility of a 51% attack. Did Satoshi address that in the paper?
Well, the term 51% attack isn't explicitly used, but the paper does go into detail about the potential for a malicious actor gaining control over a majority of the network's computing power.
And what would happen if someone managed to pull that off?
They could potentially try to double spend their own Bitcoin or prevent certain transactions from being processed, but even then, there are limits to what they could do.
So they couldn't just, like, make themselves the owner of all the Bitcoin in existence or something?
No, definitely not. They couldn't change the fundamental rules of the game. Plus, launching such an attack would be a huge risk for the attacker themselves.
Look at that.
Because it would undermine the entire network, devalue their own Bitcoin holdings, and probably lead to a loss of trust in the whole system. It would essentially be cutting off their nose to spite their face.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like a very smart move.
Yeah.
It's amazing how much foresight Satoshi had anticipating these potential challenges and vulnerabilities.
Right. This paper isn't just about the technical details. It's a framework for thinking about the future of decentralized systems in general.
Well, we've barely scratched the surface here, but we're already running out of time.
Yeah, there's so much more to uncover in Satoshi's vision.
Definitely. I'm really looking forward to diving deeper into all of this. All right, we're back and ready to delve deeper into the Bitcoin rabbit hole.
Deeper we go. Where'd we leave off? Oh, yeah, the blockchain. Proof of work. That double spending problem.
Right, we laid out the basics. How Satoshi Nakamoto essentially created a whole new system for secure online transactions.
A system based on math and code rather than trust in institutions.
Precisely. And today, we're going to explore how this system actually incentivizes people to play by the rules.
Ah, the incentives. That's where things get really interesting. Remember how we talked about mining being crucial for securing the network?
Yeah, those miners who are racing to solve those crazy complex math problems.
Right, well, there's a very clever reason for that whole setup. It's not just about the technical aspects, it's also about the economic incentives.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Explain it to me like I'm five.
Haha. All right, so every time a miner successfully adds a new block to the blockchain, they get rewarded with brand new Bitcoin.
Oh, so that's how new Bitcoin comes into existence.
Exactly. And this reward creates a very powerful incentive for miners to act honestly.
Because if they try to cheat, they risk losing out on that reward.
More than that, they risk devaluing their own Bitcoin holdings and jeopardizing the entire network. And that would ultimately hurt their own bottom line.
So it's like this self-regulating ecosystem where the pursuit of profit actually aligns with the need for network stability.
Exactly. Brilliant, isn't it?
It is, but I still have some questions about the long-term sustainability of it all. Like, what about the energy consumption of all that mining? That's a big concern.
A very valid concern. And Satoshi actually acknowledged the energy demands of Bitcoin mining in the paper.
Really?
Oh, yeah. But the paper also suggests that as Bitcoin matures, things could shift.
How so?
The incentive structure could move away from just block rewards and rely more on transaction fees.
Transaction fees?
Yeah, the small fees that users pay to have their transactions processed. As the number of Bitcoin in circulation reaches its limit, those fees would become the main incentive for miners to keep validating transactions.
Oh, I see. So the system is designed to adapt as it grows.
Exactly. And that adaptability is one of the key reasons why Bitcoin continues to be so relevant today. The white paper laid the foundation, but it also left room for innovation and evolution. Speaking of innovation, there's this section in the paper about Merkle trees that I found fascinating.
Merkle trees? What are those?
It's this really clever data structure that allows for efficient verification of transactions within a block.
Okay, you're gonna have to break that down for me a bit.
Sure. Imagine a tree with branches. Each branch combines data from different transactions. And this structure makes it super fast to verify whether a specific transaction is included in a block without having to download all the block data.
So it's like a shortcut for checking if a transaction is legitimate.
Precisely. And it doesn't compromise security at all. It's just another example of Satoshi's genius for creating a system that's both efficient and secure.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about the technical side of things, but let's zoom out for a second and talk about the bigger picture. The paper describes a world where we don't need traditional financial institutions anymore, a world ruled by peer-to-peer transactions.
Right, that was Satoshi's vision, a complete overhaul of the system.
But it seems like things haven't quite played out that way, have they?
Not exactly. Bitcoin has definitely shaken things up, but it hasn't completely replaced traditional finance. Instead, we're seeing this interesting interplay between the old and the new.
What do you mean?
Well, you've got banks and investment firms who are now exploring blockchain technology. Governments are grappling with how to regulate cryptocurrencies. Some central banks are even thinking about issuing their own digital currencies.
So it's not a complete takeover, more like a gradual evolution.
More like a dance. A sometimes awkward, sometimes graceful dance between disruption and adaptation. And it's all thanks to the ideas that Satoshi first articulated in that paper.
It's pretty remarkable when you think about it.
Truly revolutionary. And as this revolution continues, we're left with some pretty big questions. What does all of this mean for the average person? What are the risks and rewards?
Yeah, those are the questions we're going to tackle next time in the final part of our deep dive. All right, time to wrap up our Bitcoin odyssey. We've explored the technical nitty-gritty, the elegant incentive structures, and witnessed how Bitcoin has gone from a fringe idea to a global force.
It's been quite a journey, hasn't it? And yet, it feels like we're still just at the beginning.
Exactly. And as we stand at this crossroads, it's crucial to ask, what does all this mean for the everyday person? Beyond the tech wizards and the Wall Street types, how is Bitcoin actually impacting lives?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And the answer is, well, it's complicated. Bitcoin means different things to different people.
I imagine so.
For some, especially in parts of the world with unstable economies, it's a lifeline. A way to escape hyperinflation, protect their savings, and transact freely.
A tool for financial empowerment, essentially.
Exactly. But for others, Bitcoin is still shrouded in skepticism. They see the price volatility, the headlines about illicit activities, and they're wary.
Yeah, the media certainly hasn't always painted the most flattering picture of Bitcoin.
That's true. And then there's a whole debate about the environmental impact of mining. It's a complex issue with valid concerns on both sides.
Absolutely. So as we try to make sense of all this, what key insights from Satoshi's paper can help us navigate this evolving landscape?
Well, I think one of the most powerful takeaways is the importance of decentralization. Remember, Satoshi envisioned a system where power wasn't concentrated in the hands of a few, but distributed among a network of participants.
Right, and that concept has implications far beyond just finance.
Absolutely. We're seeing it play out in discussions about governance, data privacy, even the way we structure our societies.
It's a powerful idea. What else?
Another crucial insight is the power of cryptography and open source software to create systems that are transparent and accountable.
Satoshi wasn't just proposing a new currency, but a new way of building trust.
Exactly. And that's a concept with incredible potential, from tracking goods and supply chains to verifying people's identities online.
So even if Bitcoin itself doesn't become the universal currency Satoshi envisioned, its underlying principles are already having a huge impact.
I think that's a fair assessment. The seeds have been planted and the ripples are spreading far and wide.
Now, as we wrap up our deep dive, I think it's important to acknowledge the broader societal questions that Bitcoin raises. Questions about the nature of money, value, ownership.
Big questions indeed. Some see Bitcoin as a tool for individual freedom, a way to break free from the control of governments and central banks.
While others worry about its potential to exacerbate inequality or create new forms of financial exclusion.
And those concerns are valid. We need to be having these conversations, weighing the potential benefits against the risks.
Because ultimately, the future of Bitcoin and all the technologies it's inspired will be shaped by the choices we make.
That's why it's so important to stay informed, stay curious, and engage in these discussions.
Don't just accept the headlines at face value. Dig deeper, explore different perspectives, form your own opinions. The world of Bitcoin is constantly evolving, and that's what makes it so exciting.
The journey is just as important as the destination.
Well said. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the heart of Bitcoin. We hope you've enjoyed the ride.
It's been a pleasure. Until next time.